morning, Chair. I am Tarsis Khelmi from the South African Police Service.
I am Margo van Rooyen from the South African Police Service.
Yes, sir. Name is Ntutu Zalobanara, Parliament's Legal Advisor.
Thank you. Question taken, Committee Secretary to the Committee.
Honourable members, I received the apology from the DG that she will not be present, but she indicated that the present delegation will represent the department. I hope we accept her apology. Without any waste of time, I'll hand over to you, Advocate Durant.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll be trying to be as brief as possible. We did send the presentation, so I won't go into every detail, but we'll try and deal with most of the aspects. What we're trying to deal with in terms of this is to look slightly at the Child Justice Act before we deal with the framework and just give some indication of the progress that we have made since the implementation of that Act, because the framework is part and parcel of it. Then we'll focus on the framework and then deal with some of the processes relating to the tabling, etc., of the national policy framework. If we look at the governance aspects, then we will see that the Department of Justice is the lead department in the cluster. It has also set up an intersectoral steering committee of child justice matters, and that committee has met three times this year. First meeting dealt with on the mandate and governance of that committee. Second meeting considered the national policy framework and accreditation framework for diversion. And the third one dealt with the implementation impact of the Act as such. It also looked at guidelines for establishment of management of one-stop child justice centers and agreed that it will meet quarterly. The Director General of the Department chairs these meetings, and the Vice Chair is the Department of Social Development. If we look at the Act which came into operation on the 1st of April this year, we will see that on ground level it seems that this Act is starting to have some successful impact. We're seeing that there's less children that are going through the formal criminal justice system. More children are being managed right from the outside to be dealt with in terms of processes and systems that have been put in place. In this regard, it seems that the police are arresting less children, making more use of alternative ways to deal with those children through summonses and notices to appear instead of arresting them and keeping them in police cells and then taking them to court. The prosecution, similarly, is also looking at when the cases come to them, at diverting them, looking at the minor offences in particular, and then referring them to children's court inquiries where required. In terms of preliminary inquiries, that is also starting to take off readily in the various courts, and especially with regard to the more serious offences that is being used. If you look at the ground level, we see that the police, the probation officers, legal aid attorneys are communicating much more readily with each other these days than in the past. I think there's really, this Act has started to foster very good communication and coordination possibilities between the various role players in the criminal justice system. We see that those cases that are not diverted or managed outside the system are being dealt with by preliminary inquiries. Although the period has been short since the implementation, April this year, we feel that monitoring systems have been developed, and we are in the process of looking at the impact of these aspects. In our second quarterly report, we will most probably have significant detail that one can share with the various role players. But monitoring and evaluation is part and parcel of how we want to deal with this Act in particular. If we look at some of the successes, I think one of the important things is that we've met all the formal requirements that have been set in the Act in terms of obligations. We've tabled regulations in March. National directives by the Director of Public Prosecutors were tabled. Interim national instructions were tabled by the police, and they'll deal with it a little bit later. The policy framework was tabled in June, and we've also published it in the Government Gazette in August. Diversion accreditation framework has also been tabled. But from outside, we see that a lot of the formal aspects have been met and we've dealt with it as Parliament required in terms of the legislation that it provided. We've also dealt with guidelines for the management of establishment of one-stop child justice centres. Business plans have been requested from the Provincial Child Justice Forum, and we hope that the first annual report will be ready by April 2011, as is required by the legislation. Monthly operational intersectoral meetings are being held, both on a national level as well as on a provincial level. And they continue to look at the Act, the implementation thereof, as well as monitoring what's happening in terms of children that comes into conflict with the law. And they look at interventions to address any gaps that there might be. If you look at children awaiting trial, then we'll see that in the past, if we look at, for example, 2002, we had more than 2,000 children that were in the jail awaiting trial on a monthly basis with a big turnover. This decreased steadily over the years, but as of 30th of June this year, only 297 children were in prison. Even that is too much for us, and we're looking at each of those cases, monitoring them to see how we can try and fast-track those cases and deal with it. We must, however, acknowledge that many of those children that are in jail at the moment are for the more serious offences. They are really the ones that are problem children, where the parents, etc., in many instances the guardians do not want them, and where the magistrates in general feel that they need to be kept there for a period of time till their cases have been finalised. We see, fortunately, that the younger children, there's only 15 years of age is 29, 16 years old are 77, and then the rest is 17 years. As I've indicated, we feel that even this number is still too large, and we're trying to look at how we can deal with it. If we look at child and youth care facilities, I think the Department of Social Development can deal with more of those aspects in general, but it's quite clear that norms and standards have been finalised, and they are linking the designation and establishment of one child justice centre with the processes that the Child Justice Act prescribes. We're also looking at specific procedures in dealing with these aspects in general. If we look at communication, the Act was launched in Soweto on the 1st of April. We continue with communication in the media, with NGOs, ground level, as well as having outreach campaigns to communities, schools and NGOs to ensure that people know what the Act is about, how to access the methodologies that are prescribed in it, and how to make sure that we try and deal with children differently than in the past, so that we take them outside the formal justice system and deal with them in a coherent fashion. A communication strategy is being put in place. In this regard, we are in conjunction with the GCIS establishing a specific communication strategy that will link up with the JCPS cluster strategy as well in terms of it. If we look at training, various training manuals have been developed. There have been training sessions in terms of the Act as well as in terms of the framework. We're looking at the individual training by departments at the moment, which is continuing and which will continue for some time still. From the Department of Justice's side, we've got a training arm, the Justice College, and they have been starting to train justice court clerks in all the provinces, even before the Act was operational. And we have escalated that from May this year. The last provincial training will take place for this year in October, and thereafter we will look at national workshops to train the trainers and then dealing with more training in the specific provinces. In this regard, a large number of clerks have already been trained, and that will continue as I indicated. If we look at the magistrates and the judges, the magistrates have already indicated that they would require a training workshop, and we assisted them with that, and the judges of the High Court in particular have requested that we give them information on the Act as well as the framework in particular, and that has been scheduled for the 8th of September. Department of Social Development have trained their probation officers, and then Medina, which deals with social development aspects. From prosecuting authority side, we circulated the national directive, and that has gone to all the provinces, and we have also started with provincial previous prosecutors. The second set of training is currently underway, and the prosecutors are also assisting with intersectoral training with clerks and other role players with regard to some of the legal aspects. Information management, in order to monitor these aspects, we've looked at templates that we've developed in order to request information from the various departments in a coordinated fashion. We're moving towards an electronic system to capture these things, but until we have that in place, we will capture the information on a manual basis. From our side, we've developed a manual statistical tool for the court clerks, and they will give that information on a monthly basis, and we will get the first print analysis in by the end of October this year. We're also looking at an integrated case management system or child justice system, which is being developed currently, and this will link up with the integrated integrated justice system when all departments are online. If you look at diversion in particular, the principle is quite clear. We need to deal with children as much as possible outside the formal criminal justice system, taking them to programs where they'll be assisted through either skills development or aspects that relate to dealing with the behavior that they were responsible for, as well as relating to aspects such as drug treatment, etc. In the past, we dealt with the diversion in an intersectoral fashion based on an international protocol, but the legislation has now given us the legal framework to deal with this in a much stronger way. If we look at the statistics with regard to children charged by the police, then we see there is about 17% of the children that have been charged in the first quarter have been diverted. It seems to be slightly less than the same period in 2009, but we must say that there were specific circumstances in this year that we need to take into consideration. First and foremost, the Act only came into operation on the 1st of April, and that basically gave us a little time to deal with some of those issues in terms of the statistics, etc., and we need to look at the trends thereafter. But we've also found that there has been a decrease in the number of children that have been arrested and therefore could possibly be diverted. So that has an impact. But I think another major impact has been that we had a World Cup. And in that regard, we saw that there was a general decrease in crime, and specifically regarding children in particular. If the soccer could bring that, we should have more of these events so that the children have less criminal activities. But I think this is one of the aspects that we picked up. But we should also bear in mind that winter months, there is normally a decrease of crime, arrest, and diversion in the past. Notwithstanding all of these aspects, we are looking at doing some research into the reason for the decline, and we will be presenting a statistical analysis on that in the future in our next report. If we look at some of the challenges that impacts on the Child Justice Act in particular, then funding is one of those aspects that is a challenge. We required a substantial amount intersectorally for the various departments implement the Act properly. We only received 30 million. We spread that amongst the Department of Justice, NPA, and Legal Aid in terms of the requirements for dedicated child justice clerks, additional dedicated prosecutors, and then specifically for children's attorneys from Legal Aid side. We have requested additional funding, and we're also looking at donor funding to deal with some of these issues. But that is a main challenge, the money that we have, we're really trying to stretch as far as possible. Another challenge that we have is long, outstanding cases of children awaiting trial, specifically in the regional courts. Now, these are the places where the real serious cases are being dealt with. And we find there are specifically two provinces, the Limpopo and Northern Cape, where we have some of these children that have been there for quite some time. We're trying to profile all these various cases that have been long outstanding and try to follow them up so that they can be fast-tracked and prioritized throughout the system. In terms of preliminary inquiries, we're looking at the interpretation of the Act, and we will have a workshop in that regard with the judiciary so that we can have uniform implementation in terms of this, and that is scheduled for October. This will be followed up with further interaction with the other role players, prosecutors, social development, and legal men. One-stop child justice centers, because of budgetary constraints, we can't roll out as many as we want at this point in time, and we're also looking, therefore, at alternatives such as combining and designating such centers at existing child and youth care facilities where possible. In terms of the challenges regarding the police force, we found that although all police have not yet been trained, they have started training in this regard and they're dealing with it in a phased approach. Intersectoral committees are following up on the training and they're also supporting police with initiatives where possible in terms of training. Another aspect is the transport of children. In this regard, specifically in the rural areas, we find that many hours are spent on the road between police, child and youth care facilities and the court. And we're trying to find solutions to deal with that in an improved fashion. In this regard, we're looking at a task team that will look at policy discussions in this regard. Department of Social Development, they'll deal with the accreditation framework. But I think one of the aspects is that there's not enough probation officers, specifically after hours, and this remains a challenge, but they are dealing with it and I'll give more information on that. In terms of the Department of Health, we have seen that they have resource constraints, specifically regarding the evaluation of criminal capacity for children. Government notice has been published to provide that private practitioners can be requested, but they need to be paid expert witness fees, and that's obviously a further drain on funding that we have to deal with these sort of aspects. But obviously, because children is a priority for us, we are looking at that in that sense. Additional mental health facilities for children is also, at this point in time, a challenge, and we are in discussions with health to deal with that. Correctional services, once again, we find that there's not enough educational programs for children that are awaiting trial, and we are looking at dealing with that. Once again, budget seems to be a major challenge. In the Eastern Cape, regarding education, we find that there is at this point in time a specific challenge at the Queenstown Reform School regarding the resources, and we are looking at that and seeing how to deal with that in particular. This is interesting the framework, Chair. We'll see that in terms of the Section 93 of the Child Justice Act, we needed to develop a national policy framework to ensure a uniform, coordinated, and cooperative approach by all government departments, corporate organizations, and institutions dealing with matters relating to child justice. The aspects that I've mentioned thus far shows that we have, to a large extent, succeeded in having more uniform and coordinated activities between the role players. The individual committees are working, and guiding what needs to happen. The policy framework gives us that guidelines within which to work, and it really assists in making sure that we deal with things in a more cooperative approach. In terms of policy framework, it also promotes communication with NGOs and civil society and enhanced service delivery. I believe that in this regard we are successful. The policy framework has been tabled, it is before Parliament. And obviously, this is something that we will continue to promote. The framework itself covers the background to the Act, gives the context and the vision of the Act, it gives an introduction and deals with what it contains, sets out objectives of a policy framework, and how to deal with the implementation of a Child Justice Act. Some of the priorities that are set out in the policy framework deals with building capacity in the sector, ensuring the assessment of children, preliminary inquiries, sentencing aspects, provision of diversion and alternative sentencing services, and establishing child and youth care centers. my view, I think we've indicated that all of those aspects, not just contained in a paper document in the policy framework, but is actually in fact being dealt with in practice in the various areas. If we look at other priorities, obviously one-stop child justice centers, the public education communication, and the IT systems, which I've mentioned just now. If we look at the policy framework, we see that it also sets out the roles and responsibility of the various government departments. It helps set up intersectoral mechanisms, such as the Directors General Committee, which I've mentioned. It helps to look at the flow of children throughout the criminal justice system. It also looks at monitoring and evaluation and legal framework, and then basically it deals with some conclusion aspects. Chair, I've gone through very quickly through what the policy framework deals with. I just want to give some indication of what was required in terms of time limits and what we have done in that regard. First instance, we see that the Act requires that the Minister of Justice that needed to adopt and table the policy framework within 2 months after the commencement of the Act, that is by 31 May. The Minister have done so. Secondly, the policy framework had to be gazetted by 1 August. Once again, this has been done. The Minister signed the government notice, it's been published. And we've requested comments to be received by 1 October. We've also looked at the review of the policy framework on a continuous basis, and the first review will be by 1 August 2013. That's through the intersectoral meetings that we have. We are continuously looking at how to beef up the policy framework. The amendments of a policy framework will be done when required within the time frame. Chair, I think from our side, we really need to indicate that the cluster, the justice cluster and the security cluster, has really come together to deal with children in conflict with the law in an improved manner. And we really try to live by the slogan that by working together, we can all make a positive difference in the children's lives. So, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we will engage with the presentations after all the departments have presented. Department of Social Development.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'll be presenting the policy framework on divergent services in South Africa. The presentation outline looks long, but I'll run quickly to the slides that are more relevant. I'll talk to the scope of the policy itself, the structures that we have proposed, the functions, the eligibility criteria for such divergent programs and service providers, the process itself, complaints mechanisms that we have proposed, resource implications and progress thus far, and then I will conclude. In terms of introduction, this policy framework is mandated through Section 56(2)(a) of the Child Justice Act. It requires that the Minister of Social Development, in consultation with those ministers that are listed there, create a policy framework to develop a capacity within all levels of government and non-governmental sector to establish, maintain, and develop programs for diversion that was referred to when Advocate Durand was presenting. Also to establish and maintain a system of accreditation as prescribed of programs for diversion and diversion service providers. And also to ensure the availability of resources to implement diversion programs as prescribed. This section under 2G provides also for quality assurance, monitoring and evaluation of such programs and service providers. The policy really serves and tries to serve and protect the needs of children and youth at risk and those that are in conflict with the law. It also tries to ensure that diversion service providers and programs comply with minimum norms and standards for diversion that we have developed long ago. Also to support, through capacity building, the development and implementation of evidence-based practice in the field of criminal justice work, to enable and facilitate sustained quality service delivery, and finally to facilitate continuous quality improvement of such diversion programs. There are mainly three objectives of this policy: to ensure that all service providers, DSD employees, and relevant stakeholders are aware of and support our approach as a department to quality service in terms of providing diversion services. And also to ensure that there's an appropriate accreditation and quality assurance system in place for services to children at risk and those that are in conflict with the law. And finally, to ensure that the accreditation systems that are established, they are coordinated very well and are characterized by minimum bureaucracy and maximum effectiveness. The scope really has four tiers. One, the child at risk and those that are in conflict with the law. Organizational and at a program level, criminal justice and social services sector, the regulator and policy environment. In terms of the structures that are proposed in the policy, at a national level, we have proposed dedicated capacity to do coordination of the process and maintenance of national register. That capacity will be responsible for capacity building of service providers at all levels of government and non-government sector. They will be responsible for supporting the provincial teams that we have proposed and also monitoring of the implementation of this policy framework and the accreditation system itself, and make sure that they also keep database of accredited service providers and diversion programs as required by the Act. At a provincial level, we have proposed three committees in this policy framework. The first one is the accreditation committee, accrediting committee. Second one is the quality assurance panel. And the third one is the site verification team. The first one, the accrediting team, we propose that it composes of 4 to 8 members, which must include civil society members, members of academic institutions, and also the government. They can only form a quorum when they are 4+1 in a meeting or in a sitting. The committee needs to be led by a DSD provincial coordinator or head of a social crime prevention. So it differs in terms of levels. In other provinces, a director level. In most, is a deputy director. Quality assurance panel, this one is prescribed in the regulations of the Child Justice Act, so we have taken it as it is. It composes of not less than 3 and not more than 7 members, which includes civil society members and academics. Members of the panel must have knowledge and experience relating to diversion programs and children's issues. An official employed in the state may be appointed as a member of the panel. So this is exactly extracted as it is in the regulations. In terms of the site verification team, this one needs to be composed of 2 to 5 officials, including civil society members and academics. Provincial personnel, we are proposing that they serve on this structure and they should have this area as part of their key performance area. How do we nominate the members? We are saying the provincial head of department is the one who must appoint these three committees. He needs to approve or disapprove those from government departments, because we are also not looking at social development. Other government departments also are required to participate in these three structures: civil society organizations and representatives from academic institutions, as I've indicated. The provincial head may, in certain circumstances, delegate some duties and responsibilities to the accreditation coordinator that I've referred to, your head of social crime prevention in the province. Members that needs to be appointed should incorporate experience and also have knowledge of cultural diversity and knowledge of services within the broader child justice system. The third post personnel needs to include representatives of all those that they have listed also previously. Now I'm coming to the functions of each committee as we have suggested in the policy. The accrediting committee need to consider recommendations from the site verification team, accredit qualifying service providers and evidence-based programs, and make decisions on candidacy status. Establish and review standards for diversion services, provide recommendations for review of legislation and policy related to accreditation, because as they do their work, they may come across things that needs to change in terms of policy and legislation. Also, they need to make sure that they are involved in cyclical accreditation decision making, because as we now guided by the legislation, when we go beyond the time frames of the legislation, we've proposed certain time frames that will inform the policy how accreditation will take place. And also they will maintain an accreditation reviews, because every 4 or 5 years we need to relook at the accreditation to ensure that these people are still complying. Make recommendations to the quality assurance committee. Then the functions of the quality assurance panel, they need to prepare documentation and reports reflecting findings and recommendations of quality assurance activities that have been undertaken, allowing and considering organizational and program responses to the preliminary reports, monitor and evaluate the realization of policy goals and objectives for diversion processes. They also need to conduct organizational and programmatic site visits, which includes reviews of relevant documentation, interviewing of clients, which includes children who are participating in the program, parents of the children where applicable, and caregivers, and other stakeholders where relevant. They also need to contribute towards development of capacity and program content of diversion practice, facilitate the development of an organizational development plan for a particular organization if there are certain weaknesses, and assign a mentor for that organization. The site verification team, this one needs to coordinate and conduct verification and quality assurance site visits and provide written reports thereof. This committee works immediately after they've received the application, so it's the first committee that needs to go out and verify the information that has been received from the organization themselves. They need to conduct preliminary assessments and screening of received applications, as I've indicated, make recommendations regarding accreditation or removal of programs and or service providers if they are not compliant. Keep database of service providers and programs. Provincial coordinator, we are proposing that they need to lead this team. Assist with monitoring and evaluation. Assist with capacity building of emerging and existing service providers. We have also proposed eligibility criteria that is going to be used by these committees as they engage themselves in the accreditation process. An organization to qualify for an accreditation must meet the following criteria: authority and competence in terms of their legal structure and experience in working with children with offending behavior or difficult behavior. They need to have a governing body or a management structure within their organization. They need to have financial systems and financial management systems. Risk assessment needs to be done. Administrative capacity of that organization is important. Operational status in terms of programs, it needs to be visible. Recruitment procedures and code of conduct need to be clear in their documentation. Disciplinary procedures of staff, performance appraisals, grievance procedures, record-keeping policy, equipment and stationery for diversion programs, premises and security issues, policy on controlled chemical substances, application of legislation on protection of children's rights. Those things need to be articulated when an application is reviewed. Now, in terms of programs themselves, because this system, we accredit the organization and also programs separately. In terms of programs, the names and types of programs rendered need to be clear. Facilitators' knowledge and skills for the person who's facilitating the program, working with children, it needs to be clear as to what skills and knowledge is that person possessing. Assessment tools that are being used, it needs to be clear. Methods of program delivery and sessions need to be visible. Outcomes of each program, restorative justice principles need to be integrated. Monitoring and evaluation processes, individualized treatment plan for more intensive programs for children need to be clearly outlined. Formalized aftercare strategy, because after diversion, then what next? It needs to be indicated how this aftercare needs to be taken forward beyond the diversion program. Geographic accessibility of the program is important. Supervision of program facilitators need to be key, because other organizations will use not professional, but what we're saying is we're saying that those facilitators need to be supervised by professionals if they are not professionals themselves. Debriefing of program facilitators, use of research in developing and improving their programs that they are running. In terms of the accreditation process itself, there are 3 to 4 phases that are involved. In terms of phase one, that's where firstly the application is invited. What we're saying is that an application process will be open to all service providers that are expressing a need to be accredited. Application can be done in person or online. A self-assessment material will be issued upon receipt of that intent to register. Then the organization must submit a self-assessment material which needs to be reviewed prior to a predetermined closing date. In terms of the eligibility requirements, the organization is authorized to operate. It means it needs to be registered with the department as a welfare organization and providing social services. The organization needs to have at least 6 months' experience in working with children with offending or difficult behavior and or has a qualified personnel with 2 to 3 experience in the field. But we are also saying there might be organizations that are new or upcoming. Organizations with no experience, we will first place them on a candidacy status. Phase two, that's where desk assessment is done. Then the verification site visit is done by the verification site committee or team. Consideration of recommendations made by the very team. Then a decision is made whether you are on a candidacy status, then you are referred to another phase. Then they also make a recommendation whether you are going to be accredited or not based on the reports and information that has been obtained when they did the verification, the site visit. Phase three, that's where now a decision is made about accreditation or candidacy status. That's where this accreditation committee sits. So they come in the phase three. Accreditation is either denied or awarded. Then the service provider is referred to a quality assurance committee when it's denied, because it means there are certain things that are not up to standard. So the quality assurance team or panel will have to assist that particular organization to meet the required standards to come back for registration. Service provider is then informed of that decision in writing. Service provider, if you have been awarded an accreditation, you receive a certificate, and then you are placed automatically on a quality assurance cycle, because even if you have been awarded the accreditation, you're still subjected to a quality assurance mechanism because you need to be monitored. The phase four is the final phase, is basically the maintenance of that accreditation or quality assurance, where as you have been accredited, you are now subjected to a process where the panel or the quality assurance panel will visit you, but they need to at least a month in advance alert you that they will be coming and visiting you as an organization. An organization is also encouraged to conduct self-assessment or internal quality assurance as they continue implementing their program. Then there will be on-site visits by the very quality assurance panel. Then reports will be submitted also to accreditation committee after 3 weeks of visit and thereafter quarterly. Mentor non-complying organizations, sometimes they might find that as they visit you, though you have been accredited, there are certain things that you're not complying with. So that's where they will refer you back to the other committees for further intervention. Make evidence-based recommendations, particularly where removal from the register is sought. If the non-compliance is so gross, it infringes on the rights of children, they can also recommend removal from the register or withdrawal of the accreditation. In terms of complaint and conflict resolution mechanism that we are proposing in this policy, the process is such that the HODs in the province will handle complaints from agreed service providers. For instance, if you think your application was not handled properly, you have an opportunity to write the HOD and complain. Service providers are expected to lodge such a complaint in writing within 14 days of receipt of a response from the accreditation team. The complaint is to be lodged in writing to the chairperson of the accrediting committee, who must then respond within 30 calendar days of receipt of the complaint with reasons. Where applicant is not satisfied with the chairperson's outcome and decision, the matter then can be referred to the HOD himself or herself to investigate and respond to the complaint within 90 calendar days. Final outcome of the complaint need to be sent to the National Office of Social Development for recording purposes to keep the database. Matters of conduct and conflict from committees may be handled by the respective chairperson supplying terms of reference on conflict resolution Failure to attend such resolution, the matter may be referred to the provincial HOD for further management. So we've made provision for if there's conflict within committees themselves. Members of the public also may lodge a complaint about services rendered by any accredited organization if despondent, because sometimes any member of the community can observe that this particular organization, even though it has been accredited, but there are certain things that are not right, and they can also lodge complaint as individuals or as members of the public. Resource implications, we are just saying the implication of this section is that the social development must make provision for sittings of all these structures and make sure that they are effective in their functioning, otherwise there will be no accreditation process that is fair. We'll make sure that since we are accommodating civil society organizations and other academic institutions, make sure that traveling and accommodation is catered for. Provision of resources for assessments and other activities of structures. Provinces requested to avail existing personnel and tools to assist with these processes for both three committees. Capacity building is key for service providers at all levels of government and non-government sector on how the process is unfolding. Then what has happened since the tabling on the 31st of May? Briefing sessions were conducted internally on the 2nd of July 2010. Also, provincial briefings with provincial stakeholders were held. Provincial structures are already in place, the three committees or panels that I've referred to. A national workshop briefing targeting members of civil society organizations and members of other government departments is scheduled for 9 and 10 September. Notice for publication in the Gazette in compliance with Section 1562 of the Child Justice Act was published in the Government Gazette on the 20th of August 2010. I think we have circulated, we have made printouts of that notice for members to see. Roadmap on implementation plan for policy framework on the accreditation system has been developed based on the time frames that are proposed in the legislation. In conclusion, Honourable Chair, the Department is working with all relevant stakeholders within the criminal justice system to ensure provision of quality diversion services to children. Monitoring system is being developed to monitor provision of services by both government and civil society organizations. The policy framework will be formally reviewed after 5 years of implementation in line with the Child Justice Act. However, challenges that are encountered during the implementation and administration of this policy framework will be addressed by the Quality Assurance Panel. The Department has a National Resource Director of Services, which will be updated in 2012, which includes organizations rendering diversion services in all provinces that can think of.
Thank you very much. The police.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will make the deal with the presentation from the police service. The content of the presentation will basically give an introduction. We will deal with the national instruction. We will deal with the training that we are presenting, and then make some remarks concerning the communication and referral that we utilize in support of the implementation of the Child Justice Act. And then, very importantly, the monitoring and evaluation to ensure that we are actually doing what we are required to do. Now, Chairperson, in terms of the Child Justice Act, which came into operation on the 1st of April, a national instruction was developed in accordance with Section 97 of the Act. That national instruction was issued as an interim instruction in terms of the Act. It was issued and it was provided to all our police stations with before the 1st of April when the Act came into operation. Training was developed to be rolled out in three phases, and I will say more about that in a moment. And then also communication and referral networks were established. And we also set up frameworks for monitoring and evaluation. Now, as far as the national instruction is concerned, it provides clear instructions on how to deal with children in conflict with the law. It distinguishes between children who are below 10 years of age, which obviously cannot become involved in the criminal justice system, what must be dealt with in the social sector, and then children between the ages of 10 to 14 years, where there are specific prohibitions on arrest in certain circumstances, and specific instructions on where people or children may be detained. And then children between the ages of 14 to 18 years, and the different types of offences, the different categories of offences, whether they are Schedule 1, 2 or 3 of the Act. So we deal with that in specifically and in detail in the instruction. The instruction also sensitizes members to treat children differently from adults. And the purpose of that is to indicate to them how important it is that children should be dealt with as children. We should not deal with children as adults. Even though they may have committed heinous crimes, they still remain children. And unless we deal with them as children, they become part and they eventually become hardened criminals. And then we sit with a problem when they become adults. We also liaise with other role players, specifically the probation officers. We receive the list of probation officers from the Department of Social Development, distributed throughout the country to all police stations. And we also liaise with justice officials, because it's important that there are certain duties in terms of the Act that we must run in conjunction with the Department of Justice. We also work very closely together with social workers because they play an important role. Apart from them, from those social workers that are probation officers, remember that if a child is below the age of 10, that child cannot be dealt with in terms of the criminal justice system. So that's where we really need the involvement of social workers to assist us to deal with a child in terms of the Children's Act that came into operation on the very same day. We also work very closely together with NGOs, specifically when we have circumstances where we need to make sure that children are actually properly looked after, because in many instances where the police are not authorized to arrest the child, they must also make sure that the child is handed over to his parents, his or her parents. And often we find that the parents are not available, and you may have street children coming from afar, so you cannot simply hand over the child to the street to the parents. So we make sure that we have plan B in place in order to deal with the children if the parents are not available. And then reports of children used to commit crimes, that must be reported to the police, and once this is reported to the police, we give very clear instructions on how to investigate that and to make sure that we actually find the perpetrators, the persons who abuse the children to commit crimes on their behalf. And obviously, this also brings about a situation where we give clear instructions to our members to make sure that when they investigate an offense and it eventually turns out that the child or the person who committed the offense was a child below the age of 10, who cannot be prosecuted. They cannot simply stop the investigation there. They must continue to ensure that if there was an adult behind the child that used the child, we can still act against the adult. And I think it's a very important point that we address that. Then as far as the training on the Child Justice Act is concerned, the broad target group is obviously members of the South African Police Service who are employed in any capacity where they work with children or will get in contact with children who are in conflict with the law. We developed education, training and development solutions supporting the implementation of the Child Justice Act, and we decided to implement this training process in three phases. The first phase was a one-day information session that we presented in every single province to all the provincial management people and also the cluster commanders and certain key divisions in the police. The commanders of those divisions were required to also attend this information session. And during this information session, we sensitized them about the fact that the Act will come into operation, and we also provide them with the basic tools and make sure that they are aware of what is expected of them and of their members. The second phase is a two-day in-service training workshop, which is developed to address certain specific issues and which is something that can be rolled out quite quickly. The third phase is a one-week in-service learning program. Now that one-week in-service learning program is the one that will continue, and it will ensure that members are properly sensitized, and it will also integrate all the different aspects and duties of the police concerning children. Now, if we look at the training that has already taken place, first of all, the one-day training information session that was concluded on the 31st of March 2010, a day before the Act came into operation. It means that all the commanders in the different provinces, class commanders, etc., were provided with the necessary information and the tools in order to ensure implementation of the legislation. A two-day training or in-service training workshop for police officials dealing with the Child Justice Act and the National Instruction that is being presented at a decent centralized level by our provincial training officials and on a national level by our division training, or as it is now called, the Division Human Resource Development. And this started on the 24th of May. The first process was to train the trainers that will be presenting those sessions, but the eventual two-day training session started on the 24th of May 2010. The third phase, the one-week in-service learning program for police officials specializing in dealing with vulnerable children, this will also be presented or is being presented at the decentralized level and at the national level by the division training. Now, this process started on the 5th of July. We had to go through the whole process of accrediting the training material, developing the training material, training the trainers, and ensuring that they will be able to deliver quality training to our members. Now, if we look at the one-day information session, there is a list of the people that were called up to attend those information sessions. And if we look at the progress, all trainers were trained before the 1st of April. And 5,138 members were trained by the trainers before the 1st of April, before the Act came into operation. And when we say 5,138 members, we refer not to members generally, we refer to members in all the provinces, referring to that key person mentioned above on the slide. Then the two-day in-service training workshop, the target group and focus is on community service center staff. Community service center staff are people working at the police station, so if a member of the public walks into a police station, they will get into contact with the community service center staff. And then also our members that are responsible to manage police cells and the whole detention process. They must be aware, and they are one of the target groups. Then, of course, crime prevention members. Crime prevention members are members who are performing visible policing functions. They are outside there. They are either driving or crewing police vehicles, patrolling, etc., and they will be the ones attending to complaints. And then our sector commanders, because we have divided our police stations into sectors, so the sector commanders must know exactly what is expected of the police official in terms of the Act. And then the detectives, because they investigate crimes, they investigate so-called dockets, and they must know exactly what to do if a child is found to be a suspect in one of these cases. And then furthermore, FCS members. Now, FCS stands for Family Violence, Child Protection and Sexual Offences Unit. So the members of those units are specifically targeted in the two-day in-service training workshop, because we find that often, although a child may be the victim of a crime, the person committing the crime may also be a child. So they must be aware of how to deal with that. Furthermore, once a child comes to the attention of the police that he has been in conflict with the law, then we often find that if you look at the circumstances of that child, you find that that child was subject to things at home which caused him to get involved in crime. And we are specifically referring to domestic violence and other forms of sexual and physical abuse and neglect. So our FCS members will deal with those cases. They will investigate all the complaints against parents and other caregivers. And then the focus was on the Child Justice Act and the National Instruction. Now if we can look at the progress made, all the trainers who present this program at present were trained by 23 April 2010. And by 30 July 2010, the trainers have trained 990 members throughout the country. Then the one-week in-service learning program, our target group is visible policing members, detectives, the FCS unit, as I've explained earlier on, the vulnerable children is the focus. We focus on the vulnerability of children and to give an indication to our members on how the different state departments interact with one another to render an integrated service to a child who is in need of care and protection. The progress that we've made, all the trainers that are presenting this program, their training were completed by 30 June 2010, and by 30 July the trainers have already trained 151 members. You must understand, Chairperson, that this is a week-long program, so it takes time to set up this whole program and to develop all the material, do the quality assessment and make sure that it can be presented, and then to make the necessary arrangements to have members away from their positions for a week in order to attend the training. Then as far as communication and referral is concerned, the information on the designated probation officers and child and youth care centers was provided to all police stations. That was the information that we received from social development. And we look forward to receive all amendments from social development so that we can also provide that to the various provinces so that they can distribute it to all the police stations. Then we provide information on facilities to which children may be referred. And that information was made available on the internal computer network, the intranet of the South African Police Service. So at any police station, a person can sit, type in the particulars of any information that he or she requires relating to facilities, in other words, where are child and youth care centers, etc., and that information is then available and is provided to him so that he can identify the nearest center where these services are available. And this information is continuously updated as changes occur. We keep it on the intranet of the police. And then our communication plan. The communication plan was adopted in support of the implementation of the Act to raise awareness of the new dispensation. Because the Child Justice Act actually brought about a new criminal justice system as far as children in conflict with the law is concerned. The communication plan targets the South African Police Service members, community police forums, and communities in general. And then it started with a circular that was circulated throughout the police service and provided to every police station, in which the implementation instructions were issued prior to 1 April 2010, so that they were ready for the implementation. And Chairperson, if you look at a number of the high profile cases that were quite well reported on in the media, that occurred very soon after the implementation of the Act, and I can cite one example, the murder of Eugene de Blanche in the Northwest Province. Our police service actually dealt with that child, who is one of the suspects in that matter. They dealt with him superbly and perfectly in accordance with the Act in close cooperation with the Department of Justice and Social Development, which I think is a prime example of how such cooperation can take place. Then furthermore, we are in the process of developing a booklet on policing the Child Justice Act. That is a pocket-sized booklet that we will provide to our members, and which will also be distributed and be available to members of the public so that they can get an idea of exactly what they can expect from the police when a child gets in contact with the law. And then we have a Pol TV channel where our members can actually, for 1 hour in a week, to attend Pol TV broadcasting sessions where they can when they are provided with information and content on the implementation of the Child Justice Act, as well as other aspects that must also be provided, but this is one of the communication channels that we utilize in order to ensure that all our members are fully conversant with their responsibilities in terms of the Act. Then finally, Chairperson, we get to monitoring and evaluation. Now, the progress with the training interventions is continuously monitored on our centralized training administration system. Every time any member receives training, and especially training on the Child Justice Act, that member's particulars are entered onto our computer system, and at any given point in time, we can then withdraw from the system information as to exactly what progress has been made as far as this training is concerned. Secondly, the number of children that are charged are monitored and reported to the intersectoral Child Justice Committee on a monthly basis. So we keep record of them and provide this on a monthly basis. And Chairperson, you would have noticed from the Department of Justice presentation that the number of children arrested have actually declined. So I think what that tells us is that the police are following the Child Justice Act and making sure that children are not arrested, but only arrested as a last resort in those circumstances where we have no other option. And I think that was exactly the intention of the legislature. Then furthermore, the police has provincial inspectorate and visible policing division monitor the implementation of the Act continuously during station visits, and they are planned 90 visits per year from national level. That is from national level. So from a national level, we have a program of visiting at random police stations. In every province, is responsible to develop a program to visit stations within the province to conduct inspections, determine whether the instruction is in actual fact complied with, determine whether the instruction is available in the community service center, whether the act is available, the regulations, and whether there are station orders where the station commander has indicated how certain aspects must be dealt with in the station area. That gives account to the peculiarities of the area of that police station. And that Chairperson is basically it. So if there are any questions, we are willing to answer.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we can engage with the presentation. Commissioner.
Thanks, Chairperson. Are we getting all the presentation? Okay. I'll start with the social development. So, I've got only one question there, no, two questions. The document is written secret. The experience has told me that when you see the document written secret, you're even afraid to touch it, you know, and to read it. We must be clear there. Secret to whom? And then page 20.
Yes.
It is your follow up. What is the status of the document now? Okay, page 20. Will you please, because there is something hidden there, I will tell you that this page 20, it is the Mer in Afrikaans, I don't know, the Maru, yeah, it's the Maru of the whole document. Now, will you please come out clearly here and explain all those bullets? Please come out as yourself if you want this service to go ahead. Because I can see that if you are saying must ensure the availability of the resources, this social development, and also provision of resources assessment and other activities, you are requesting that the provinces to avail the personnel and the resources. Just try to come out. If they don't do this thing, are you going to succeed? I want that, the whole bulletin and that one. Okay? Let me go to Department of Justice. Your page 4, when starting the brief thing, you said this information or this document is starting to have that impact. How serious is this impact? Because you said it is starting to have that impact. That is your statement. Your page 8, here is a comment. I'm very much impressed to see that the number dropped to 297. Is this 297? It's for the whole prison in our country. If it is so, really, it is so, it is impressive to have you. Page 16. There's also additional funding. Yes. Here I'm having a serious problem when reading these things here. I was definitely shocked. Okay. This act has been promulgated by the government, by the ruling party, to have this thing. And if you talk about the resources and you are giving the indication that no, the funding, because you talk about the constraints of the budget, yes, led to the constraint of the resources and budget constraints. And you talk also about the donors. Let us forget about the donors, because the donors are going to might happen. Is the government ready here to give the resources in order to have this legislation to succeed? Definitely, if you tell us that no, you have submitted the budget for so much as a treasury in order to give you the funding. But how much are you expecting in order to for this legislation to be successful? How much do you expect? Because the additional, you are saying the additional funding you requested to the treasury. But how much are you looking at? And then you talk about in page 17 the long outstanding cases of the children awaiting. During FIFA you had the special courts. And
I heard from the TV and everybody was saying, we, during FIFA, we have learned something because we could do A, B, C, D faster. Can't we use those special codes in order to bring down or to eradicate this backlog? Yeah, it was the last question. Let me go to the police. There's no pages, but I'll try to. Let me start by this statement. I'm seeing this Riboningo in the magazine of the police. FIFA, it came, it is full with FIFA issue here. Are we going to have the same situation in this bill or this act, so that you blow it as you blow the FIFA here, so that people will be able to read and it is part of your communication strategy also. You vuvuzela it. Okay. Let us go to the faces. The 1 day information, 2 days, and 1 week. But I'm seeing here your targets. You targeted to the special commissioners, those have been listed there. Provincial commissioners, they have been told. But my problem is that it is stressed only to the police officials dealing with the justice, with the Child Justice Act. Those are your main targets because they're dealing with the issue now. You said presented to the decentralized and on a national level by training. My issue is this justice is going to be included at the training college, training colleges as a curriculum to start there, and so that new police officers who are coming out, they will have this information equipped, doing everything. Now, your main target are those already trained before this act has been passed. It's how you are doing this thing. This 1 week, you targeted well when I see these provincial commissions and everything. But the number of 5,138 members were trained. Those who were training this first batch, it was the legal teams yourselves, not so. Can we get now recently, because I see now that the big figure of 5,138 members. Now, is this number spread at the provinces, so that we'll be able to know that at a particular station we have so many set type of. There's another one here, very interesting. The same, this 990, what is that question? It's not numbered, but 990. Is the last slide? Let me check. No, it's 950, that one. I'm having a question of that one. I saw something about 900 and something. Where is that? Is it 990?
Where is that slide? Oh, yeah, 990, that's it. This 990, you all were saying all trainers were trained by the 23 users, okay? By the 30th of July, trainers have trained 990 of members. Those are old members. Is it members excluding those who are specifically doing the duty? Is it an ordinary member? Because we expect that every member must definitely know that, you know, when coming in contact with a child, he will do A, B, C. You are saying we get this information from the SAP intranet and everything. You know, I'm not going to use the police lazy to read, but we have experience on the domestic violence. General Sergeant Hayes suffered a lot in order to have this thing displayed in the church office. You trained this to brand, they were not following. Now, if it is now so hidden technologically, are they going to know about this thing? Can't they do as they were doing as the Domestic Violence Act, displaying them, having their don'ts and don'ts, such type of? Yeah, this Paul TV, you're saying that we're doing simulating on the TV, Paul TV. The old police station has Paul TV. If they have, then I'll be very much happy. As a suggestion, can't this program be extended to the duty calls? Because as a duty calls, it's where everybody is gluing in front of the screen of that program. That I must commend the police. Police are doing a wonderful job of that program. Duty calls. If we can have this thing placed there, that's my comment, you will disseminate this thing just like Fed Cakes. Now, this booklet, is this booklet going to be published in all the 11 languages, official languages? If so, I'll be very much happy because I may bring my family at me, yeah, share that inside, they'll be reading in song. The last slide. This visit of that note, the Division Monitoring Implementation Inspectorate, or this thing, myself and General Hiddenes, we know that the inspectorate, their tendency is to produce thesis. But I prefer that those inspectorate, are they going to do this visit coupled with man-to-man instruction, because that is the purpose. For them coming back at the police, from the police station, coming and compile the CDs like this and replace it, just to make the National Commissioner happy, that no, they visited the place. This 90 visits, it must be coupled with man-to-man instruction, man-to-man on the roof. I think I'll have to ask more because I'm just afraid. General Sergeant was my teacher in the University of Africa. Then he will say that my student is now starting to be shining. Thanks.
Hey, what's a policeman? What is a policeman? Honorable Matilda.
I'm happy that we have our legal services here, because the problem with our committees is that we don't have a researcher who would have analyzed this process. Possibly you will indicate to us, because my fear here, what the criticize the police, but what justice and the social development is saying is that they are being pushed with unfunded mandates here.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first complaint here is around funding, but social development is not indicating as to what is the situation in implementing this particular piece of legislation. Our experience is that people who suffer at the end of the day are implementers down there,
mm-hmm.
provinces, because of this unfunded mandate. You see? Now, we want you to come very clear. I want to repeat what my colleague has indicated, particularly in terms of justice. What did you apply for? Because why are you telling us this is what you have received? So that we then are in a position to can understand as to whether this is an unfunded mandate or not. But all other stakeholders must indicate the implications of this particular bill in terms of implementation. I know the police have been complaining about not getting enough social development, we're saying the same, they're not getting enough from the budget that they have applied for. And that is the first situation. But what is also interesting from the police, it is that when the police were very busy during the World Cup, they were able to train people. I'm not sure as to how did they pull them out, so that by the 30th of July, they have trained these people that were supposed to be on the ground to deal. I'm not sure as to what happened, you know, because I think there's something not right in that situation. The last point. maybe these two, because I think because our balanced legal advisor is here, he will then indicate in terms of some of the areas as to whether, in terms of what they have indicated to us, if that is the situation in line with the law and these things are practical enough, they can be implemented. You know what are the, besides the implications have indicated, what are the legal implications in terms of what has been presented to us now? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Just one issue, because the police student has taken the whole presentation on our behalf and on behalf of opposing party. No more like I think both presentation to me does not have the gist of performance. How do we measure performance on all these presentations? Because what I see is that if you come back next time, we will be receiving annual financial report, but not a performance report. The programs to me does very little to indicate what will be measured, especially at our level, which want to see the department, the entire department, the ministry being measured by us on aspects of all these presentations. The other issue is, of course, they've raised it. The question of budget and funded mandate. I think that was, I won't go to it because it has been raised. The issue of the police will be reviewed after 5 years. Is it the intention of the bill to be reviewed after 5 years? Is it cast or stone? How do we make input now towards conclusion of this, of some of this bill? Because already it says after 5 years. Why is it so rigid? We don't anticipate challenges towards 5 years. Because we need, if we are a developmental state, I think we need to be flexible, to be dynamic. Our legislation should accommodate what we need to change in the process where we experience problems. The other issue is an example given to a child in the Eugene Terrible case. That was prime good example. Is it not because of sensationality of the situation, and that other situations are not sensational, and therefore approach to that issue is casual? Is it not because of that? Because indeed that one was very sensational, and no one would hide behind anything. You would have to do work. But what about others? I don't know how this will be clarified. I've seen in the TV, whether it's part of this or it's something else, where, don't know whether it's police or whatever, removing a child from a guy under a tree. 2 days later, the child was returned. Is it part of? I really can't connect that, but I saw that in the TV. Is it part of the process of implementing this child system? It's 2 days ago. 2 days ago. Yesterday or a day before yesterday, the child was returned from a guy. I don't know whether that guy was a foreigner or he doesn't have ID or whatever, but the child was taken out. There were women with uniform, like a metro police like uniform. It's not just a national uniform of police, something like that. But is it connected? And what was happening? Is it part of this process? The last thing is this thing of the overall objective of the entire thing. Is it going to be reached? The restoration of justice in society. Will this rehabilitation program really restore, especially at the level of this, I don't want to say delinquent, but this children? Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to come back on this matter around the child centers. You see, one bad thing that has happened in this country, when you move around, criminals would always say, we want to go back to our hotels, which are prisons. You see? Now, are we also creating hotels for people that are supposed to be rehabilitated? Because, you see, I'm saying it because we're sitting with the Social Development Department here, where millions of children and people outside there are going hungry. And whilst people that we kept in places of safety because of crime are seeing those places as hotels. And I'm just saying this because if you go out there, criminals are saying, no, we'd rather stay in prison than stay outside because we believe we're kept well in these prisons because they are hotels. Now, are we creating the same thing? Whilst I know that we need to rehabilitate, and this process must assist to bring back this child into society, you know? But are we not doing something wrong where we put a lot of money into these particular systems and leave people hungry outside here in the country? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Only three questions and very short questions, Chairperson. The one is for social development. On page 8, you are saying the accreditation process. Chairperson, you know corruption is very, very, very rife in the country, corruption. Now, the document is saying that these organizations must at least have 6 months' experience to work with these children. You see, my worry is that Dennis Groom is setting up a company or a structure to qualify to be part of this, to get this tender. My recommendation will be at least 1.5 years and not less. We can't have a situation where people are going to experiment with our children. We can't do that. The issue that Ndate Madila is raising, Matiti matches in Kroonstad.
the Child Care Facilities Act. Children are coming back, being released, coming back, being released, coming back, because of what Ntate Matila is saying, the hotel situation. We must really address those things if we want to address crime. But this type of thing is not addressing crime. To the Justice Department. The Justice Department on page 17 is saying long outstanding cases of children awaiting trial in regional courts. How many children are there affected in the Northern Cape and elsewhere? The police are saying on page 4 that the 2 days in training, they are saying that they have also trained people. I will read this. Responsible personnel, including members responsible for police cells and detention. I want to know. The chairperson was in prison. You know that there is rotation of people who is chief. Here's the commission chief. How is it possible to train people? All the members of the police will work there to open cells and to look into cells. There's no specific person, police, who will do that type of job to say that day shift, what is 3 shift in the police. Now, how is it possible that these people were also trained? Thank you very much.
Just make a follow up on this training. I've seen somewhere in one slide saying the police are not yet trained, and they'll be trained in phases, something like 3 phases. And yet, at the beginning, we are told that the program is making an impact. What type of impact is that without, if the police are still undergoing training in phases, is it a dangerous impact or a good impact, positive, negative, neutral impact, if there is such a thing? I'm trying to connect the impact with the police that are still going to in 3 phases.
Honourable Nelson.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm not late in this meeting. I was delayed by rain outside. Because when they planned about Max building, they didn't plan for people like us when they're outside how to move in whilst the rain is falling.
Okay.
And but I could realize, I've read and I see that I've missed and nothing. But I think the commissioner or the general has asked so many questions. As a result, I followed. But what I mean, to come to terms with here, I was watching TV this morning, and the Minister of Justice is somewhere in KZN opening up a center, child care center. I think it's in line with this Child Justice Act. Now, I know somewhere in the Western Cape, there is something they call BOSABA, I think so, which is about, it's also about keeping children out of prison. Now, in line with what Honorable Matile was asking, I want to know what is the integration? How do you integrate this? What has BOSABA did for the children? Because my question is in line with the in and out of children in this center. And it's worth the one that I've seen now in Johannesburg and in Durban this morning. It's nice, and the beds, I think it's double beds. They are very nice. and I was listening when they were talking, and I thought that whilst I'm coming here, I'm interested to know what happened to COSAPA. What is your experience, both social development and the justice, I mean, together with the police, because they were together in that program. What is your experience? What happened? What have you done so that now you are creating new centers? How are we ensuring that we are pushing children out of this situation? And the second thing that I want to ask, I'm not hearing anything in terms of social development or justice or the police talking about educating these children when they are there. Education, because when we were talking to this Minister of Correctional Services, she talked about programs in correctional centers, education, so that people can start studying in those centers so that when they come out, they've got a little bit of qualifications or skills so that they can start doing something that can maintain themselves instead of going back to this. If I can hear that, I mean, maybe I'll be interested. Now I was interested when Honorable Mokobo was talking about the developmental state. Now, but I think I'm a little bit afraid, but I'm going to ask this question so that maybe you will assist that. What is developmental about this act and about this program, especially for social development? Gone through the diversions and all these things. I know we've heard about them when we listened to COSAPA, when we had a program with them, I mean, to learn about their program. But what I'm just interested to know from you, I mean, both departments, if you can show me an element of development. What is developmental about this program? Just that if I can get that so that really, really, when we support these programs, we know that as we're talking about the developmental state that has to change the lives of the people and the mindset and everything, at least in your program, there is something developmental so that we can nourish it and make sure that really we're moving with the developmental state. Thank you, Chairman.
You can respond in the order you have made presentations. Justice Department, Social Development, and lastly the police.
Thank you very much, Chair. Also appreciation for the questions that were posed to us. I think first and foremost, if we look at the impact aspect that was raised, I think we need to bear in mind that this act is still relatively new. In terms of implementation, it came to operation 1 April, so the impact will come after a period of time. But we have indicated what we are already seeing is that numbers are dropping from children that are what we normally would have seen through the criminal justice system. They are now being dealt with in a different way. So in terms of that, we are seeing that there is a positive impact already. Furthermore, we're seeing that in terms of the arrest of children, that there is a decline in terms of that. And that's positive because the police, as General Gelmes has indicated, are being dealt with in a different way. They've been looked at and they've been considered to see, do we need to arrest this person or can we deal with that person in a different way? Can we bring him through to a program in a different way than an arrest, etc.? What we from Justice Department side will be doing in terms of intersectoral approaches is to look at monitoring what's happening in the various departments, what's happening in social development, police, justice, etc. What are the prosecutors doing, etc. And we will be monitoring that on a quarterly basis. Excuse me. The idea is that those quarterly reports will be brought to Parliament as well, so that we can show you these are the declining numbers that we are seeing. This is what's happening in terms of children that are taken through diversion. This is what's happening on a quarterly basis so that we have that statistical aspect to deal with. If we look at the question relating to the 297 children that are in the jail, yes, the positive news is that is countrywide.
It's not just for one province, it's for the whole country. So it is very good news. It has come down from thousands to less than 300. And we're working very hard to make it even less. And that is the type of impact that we are talking about. It's a real measurable thing that we can see. We can see there are less people, and we can measure that. And every month we can see if there's less children, etc. It's another performance measure that we can look at and see how do we deal with it. I think the funding aspect is a crucial thing. If we look at this whole piece of legislation, it had a very broad ambit. It said we need to look at a whole new system, a whole new way of dealing with children, something out of the normal criminal justice system. We need to deal with children in view of their very complex nature, in view of their sensitivities, their vulnerabilities, etc., and deal with them in such a way that we can rehabilitate those that are in conflict of law, that we can look at them and deal with them properly. And that's why we're looking at things like infrastructure, for example, having more one-stop child justice centers and all of those things. When we put in a budget, because this act was costed before Parliament approved it, the costing that we indicated was substantial. And what we gave to Treasury in terms of budgeting plans and costing plans was 1.2 billion rand over 3 years. And that included infrastructure. But I think we have to be realistic. No government can just afford something like that in the economic situation that the world is in the moment. The Treasury came back to us and said, we can't give you that at this point in time. What we can do is to look at your current budget and to look at what has been requested, and you need to reprioritize in terms of your budget to deal with some of the aspects. So for this financial year, in the beginning of the year, we said we need at least 51 million to help deal with these issues. And Treasury came back and said, we can't give you that. We can only give you, I think, 30 million as has been indicated in the document. So it is a question of there is concerns in terms of funding. But we also understand why there is concerns, because there is huge constraints also from National Treasury side in terms of it. But I think it's a question of a balance. How do we make sure that we treat children as they should be treated in terms of the legislation that Parliament passed, and how do we deal with that over a period of time? So what we did was, we said that money that we've received, we also reprioritized some of the budget of the department to help deal with it and augment it. We've given some of the money to the prosecutors, some to legal aid, etc. But from police and social development side, they've reprioritized within their own budget to make sure that they can deal with the training and the issues relating to that. Social development to deal with social workers and the other appointments and aspects, and they'll deal with their budgeting aspects just now. But the idea is that we were requested from Treasury side, reprioritize your budget, look at it. So in that sense, yes, we are unfunded. But I think it's something that we'll need to grow over a period of time and see how one can deal with it. From our side, I think what we've done in the first couple of months and up to now has been remarkable in terms of it. We've tried to meet all the obligations thus far. We've put in place the framework. We've put in place monitoring mechanisms. So from our side, I think we're trying to really get to grips with the implementation of the Act. In terms of the long outstanding cases, I think I really want to say that perhaps I've given a wrong impression that there's many of these cases. In actual fact, there's only 14 of them that are very long outstanding in the Regional Court. But that's 14 cases too many for us. We view it as there's one long outstanding case that's longer than a period that we have set out in the framework. And in the framework we've set out, we want cases in a district court to be dealt with within 6 months, in district court within 9 months, in the high court within 12 months, etc., and things like that. So if we view that those things are longer than those periods of time, we view it's unacceptable, because we're dealing here specifically with vulnerable groups that needs to be assisted. So 14 in the two provinces that we've mentioned, we are specifically vigilant to see in cases in the other provinces as well, where there are some of these cases, to monitor them and see what's happening. Now the problem that we have with those cases is I think, coming a long way, and some of them are partly heard. So it's not a question of now just saying they still have to be heard, and we're now putting them out of those courts where they are and putting them into specialized courts to be dealt with. Most of those cases are partly heard before magistrates and regional courts that are dealing with it. But we have problems and challenges in the sense that some of them are represented by legal representation. And those people's changes, etc., and there's other reasons for why the cases are taking long. What we can say from our side is that what we want to do is to prioritize these cases. And we are looking at each of them individually to see how we can deal with that in conjunction with the prosecuting authority and making sure that the witnesses are there, that the cases can be dealt with, etc. So hopefully, in a very short near future, we'll be able to say those 14 cases have been dealt with. There might be some others that have been cut onto the list, but we will keep on monitoring them and see how we can deal with them. We've also said that to help deal with backlogs in this country, we need to put in some specific measures. And what we've done from the Department of Justice side in conjunction with the other role players is to put in backlog courts to help deal with these measures. At the moment, we've got 55 regional court additional backlog courts, and they have managed to deal within the past 2 years with more than 20,000 cases that previously would have still been on the rolls if it wasn't for those cases. We're also saying that in those dedicated backlog courts, we need to prioritize cases such as the ones relating to children. They need to be placed in those courts, as well as sexual offences cases, so that we can deal with those cases in a more speedier way. And it is starting to pay dividends. We've also now rolled that out to the district court level, and at the moment we've got 13 additional district courts, and we'll be growing them in the year as we get more funding to help deal with that. So, Chair, I want to indicate that we are putting in measures to help deal with those long outstanding cases. In terms of a question of dealing with the mandate, I think we've dealt with the funding aspect. The practical aspect, I think, is quite clear that the police are arresting less, there's more diversions, etc., and I think we'll ask social services to just give some information on what that diversion really encompasses and deals with, and how the children are being assisted through those programs. In terms of measurement of performance, what we've done is, in terms of a national policy framework, is to set out a range of things that we will be monitoring. And that is, for example, we were looking at quantitative and qualitative measures relating to, for example, things such as the arrest of children, making sure that there's attendance on criminal procedure of people, assessment, how many assessments, how have they been dealt with, all those sort of things. We're looking at preliminary inquiries, how they've been dealt with. We're looking at diversion, children awaiting trial, sentencing of children to look at how they are being dealt with. All of those things are set out in the framework, and we will be looking at them specifically, and we will, in our next quarterly report, give specific feedback in terms of what are the progress in terms of that. So, Chair, I think the framework gives us a model in which we can measure some of the aspects, and next time we can give you, say, this is now what has happened in terms of those things. So, from our side, we feel that there is a possibility of measuring the performance in terms of this, and secondly, to also indicate what will be measured. Our quarterly reports will indicate that. But I think what we need to bear in mind is that this policy framework that we're discussing today gives us a guideline in terms of what the whole department, the whole government needs to do with in terms of the various departments to ensure that children are treated in an improved fashion. The question was asked in terms of the review in terms of 5 years. I think if we look at the slide that dealt with it, that we said that this framework can be looked at least once every 5 years. It doesn't mean that we must wait 5 years. So what we're doing at the moment is through the monthly meetings that we are holding in terms of operations and the quarterly meetings we are holding in terms of the DG's meetings, we are assessing what requirements need to be dealt with. And if we find that there's a requirement that we need to change this, we can change it.
We don't need to wait 5 years. There is very specific ways in which we can deal with it and change it as soon as it is possible. In terms of restoration, I just want to indicate really that the program, through, specifically through diversion, is one of those things where restoration is really taking place. Those children are really coming to grips with acknowledging what they've been doing, looking at finding development ways to improve their skills, looking at bringing them to face with what they've done, but also in assisting them to take those paths and not really then become a recurrent, reoffending child, etc. So I think once again, social development may assist a little bit more in terms of that. The hotels aspect, I think they'll deal with that. I really want to say that we must not view child justice centres like the one that the Minister Dean has hotels. They might look nice, etc., but it's a confined space, it's giving very specific structure to a child, etc., and dealing with issues, etc., and it is there for a period of time to help deal with rehabilitation, to help dealing with that child in a certain way. We need to view that these are the places where we would like to keep our children that are in conflict of law, not in a jail where there are adults, not in a jail where there are other possibilities, where they just come out after a period of time, hardened criminals, etc. We need to look at it in a slightly different manner. In terms of the aspect in terms of training, SAPS will, I think, deal with that, but I just want to mention that what we mentioned on page 18 is that although all policemen have not yet been trained, SAPS have started training in 3 phases. And I think SAPS have indicated how they've dealt with that. And I think we need to bear in mind that the police force is huge. We can't just have dealt with, since 1 April till now, with training of every policeman. But I think they've indicated how they've structured it to make sure that the most senior people, the people at provincial and at commissioner levels, etc., are dealt with in a proper way, that the message gets down, the guidelines are there, things are starting to get in place. So from our side, the impact is quite clear that the training that has already been given is starting to pay impact. There's less children being arrested, they've been dealt with in different ways, so from our side, that is quite positive. In terms of the Western Cape NGO that's dealing with issues, I think it might be Busasa, not Busapa, but I'm not sure, but I think social development might be able to assist in that regard, in how they deal with those issues. I think I've covered with most of the aspects. I just want to ask my colleague to just deal with the education part in terms of some of these things and perhaps some of the other aspects that I might not have dealt with fully.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity concern. Can I just begin by saying that as myself, I've been involved with the child justice system for 10 years now in the Department of Justice, and we have really seen the impact of us working together even before the Act was implemented in making sure that we address the children's issues as prioritizing and fast-tracking the children's issues. Because we work so well together as a cluster, we are really prioritizing and monitoring the children that get into the child justice system. So we are making sure that the children get the attention that they need. And I really must thank Social Development of the Police Correctional Services. We really have been meeting with one of our cluster committees that, even without the legislative obligation, we've been meeting since 2002. So it does mean, and the numbers that we are getting through is saying for us that even though there was no legislation on board, we all realized in terms of the Section 28 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, the children's rights of paramount importance. We have to make sure that we prioritize and fast-track their rights. So this is why we are working together so well, because we all realize that this is the issue that must be prioritized. Secondly, in terms of educational programs for children, there has been much work done in this regard. I'm hoping that my colleagues from Social Development will be able to tell you what they have done in this regard. The correctional services did educational programs and rehabilitation programs for sentenced children, but not for children awaiting trial. So the children who await trial are given food and place to read and medical attention and stuff like that, but they're not giving schooling, they're not giving educational programs. And some of them, although we've brought them down, some of them with really serious cases do await trial for anything up to a year if it's a regional court case or high court case. So what happened is we tried to, because correctional services said it's very difficult to get a schooling program in place because the children might be there for anything from up to 2 days up until a year. So how do you put a program in place for the child who's there for 2 days together with the child who's there for a year? So there was a program developed, a pilot program developed in social development and education, that they also did a pilot program in 6 prisons in 2019. And I'm going to request that they inform you what the procedures are in that regard, because the formal request by the Director General and Physical Child Justice Steering Committee was that you need to submit that assessment to the DG and come with a formal follow-up request and policy recommendation maybe to be added to the national policy framework in this regard. I do know that one of the critical issues involved is the budget. But we said we would help them to try and get donor funds if possible. I know you said don't look at donor funds, sir, but if we don't have anything else, this is, and we do have people who are very interested in helping us in this regard. The third thing that I just wanted to raise is a developmental program. Why for us the child justice system is so important is because actually in the child justice system we're looking at the consequences of crime. And this is why members of this honorable committee have been saying we have to look at the causes of crime as well. And we started to work more narrowly together with social development also in that regard. But if you look, for example, the impact, linking to the impact question, when we went as the Portfolio Committee of Justice in 2018 visited Bloemfontein and Narina, one-stop child justice, and the two existing ones, they specifically requested, let us go and visit one of the diversion programs. And there was a young man there, we had to get permission because they had children under the age of 18, but there was a young man there with the facilitator who came afterwards and answered the questions of the Portfolio Committee, and that young man said, thank you very much for the opportunity that this Bloemfontein one-stop child justice center and the police and the magistrate gave me. Because I was involved in gangs, I did drugs, I stole, I was arrested, I was taken to the one-stop child justice center. They put me in a diversion program. I came to know what was the wrong things that I did. And then now I'm a facilitator for children for diversion programs myself. Because the children were listening to me. I'm a young one. And they were also listening and say, okay, you know what you're talking about. So his life was changed around with the fact that we put him on a diversion program. Instead of putting him in prison, we put him on a diversion program. The diversion program taught him what are the life skills, what are the internal strengths that he can build on to turn his life around, and in the process he's now turning the lives of other children in his community around. So that is the purpose of the developmental diversion program. We do not want children in the criminal justice system. We want to take them out as much as possible. We want to put them into systems where social development and the rest of our cluster can assist them to become productive members of society. We don't want to throw the keys away. So this is why it's very important for us to be working together and to be reporting to you what are the successes that we have achieved in spite of some of the challenges that we are still experiencing in this regard. I do think that my colleagues from social development and the police can answer the other questions, except if there's anything else that we haven't answered. Thank you very much.
Commissioner? Yeah, Chairperson, it's a follow-up to the justice. Let me start here. Our report, as we are sitting here, it mustn't show the issue of misanalysis. I don't know how to put it in English. I don't know. But you know, our report must be so objective when we are going to compile a report. We don't want to see a situation that was, no, these people are going to make a plan to come with this and that and that and that. As Honorable Martila has said, funding is a problem. We haven't experienced because we passed the traditional what been, and only to find that they have no money to pay some of these traditional leaders.
what we need here, we don't want that, no, we are going to do about the bit we are having, no. You must tell us that, no, I got 30 million. I wanted 50 million. The 20 million will be based on this and that, that motivation. So that when we write our report here, Chairperson, the government must see that there's a need of this money. That is our duty. But if we come and see, we said, okay, no, the bill we can move, the money they're having is enough. They can, no. We, you know, if you are used to drive to a long journey with a half tank or a quarter tank, you will sleep on the way one day and you will never reach your destination. We mustn't do that. To be loyal is to be honest. You put things clearly. How many times where you have to go and buy salt during the night because your servant was so, he or she wanted to be smart, not to trouble the boss, that no, everything is okay at the dispensary. But whereas there is nothing, no mozzarella, no nothing. But please let us come out. He said, I wanted 50 million to can reach this thus far. But presently, I need additional 20 million because of 1, 2, 3, 4. Our report will be nice and clear. Thanks, Chairperson.
No, Chair. We must indicate, I hear about this donor funding. But our experience is that the IMF or the World Bank would want to run your country. Because that's why Africa is suffering about donor funding, you know. Because they come with specific programs, and that's what they're telling you. And that's why we're saying it is important that, in terms of this particular process, we're not focusing on donor funding, so that external forces do not come and change the program that this country has. You see? I mean, your police force will be changed, your justice system will be changed completely by their own programs. Because what they need is not what you need. And that is the reality of the casualties we are seeing in Africa, we are seeing in Asia, is because of this particular donor funds that are coming through. And therefore, I think, let us not focus on that, Chair. I just wanted to make that point, because we are going to, in real terms, reject anything that has to, in terms of your programs, that comes with donor funding. I'm not going to, you know, align myself, and I don't think all politicians in this particular house are going to align themselves with donor funding. I know the portfolio committee has already indicated to Justice, in terms of this, whatever program, because I was sitting in that meeting, that it can happen. Donor funding, it does not assist this country. Thank you, Chair.
Social development.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll start with the one of the classification of the presentation. I just need to indicate that it's a mistake. It was classified within the department, but we forgot to remove the classification when we circulated it for committee members. The status of the document is that it's an approved document that is accessible to anybody. It's a public document as we speak. In terms of resources, I think Advocate Durant tried to speak to this on behalf of all others. But it's important for me to indicate that as social development, this bill has been in place since 2005. Though it's a new act now since April, there was costing done then, 2005-06, and budgets were allocated to cluster departments by that time. Hence, that's why we currently have 28 facilities. We built them using the budget that was allocated, and otherwise we couldn't have resources then to build secure care facilities, the child and youth care facilities. We build them progressively from 2005. And we also managed to appoint 484 probation officers that are only working on this issue of children in conflict with the law. And we also have 387 assistant probation officers that are working with these probation officers to make sure that
the services are provided. And we are also funding NGOs as we speak that are providing diversion services. So, yes, resources will never be enough. We have never received additional funding since we made a cluster bid together with Justice the previous years. The 30 million that you see was only allocated to Justice, NPA, and Legal Aid. So what we providing services is based on the budgets that were allocated previously and our normal fiscals that are allocated every year, and then we reprioritize within and allocate money on the program for social crime prevention. We don't have figures, but if the committee needs figures, we will be able to provide that to say, under personnel, this is how much we have, under for transfers for NGOs that are providing diversion services, this is the amount we've got that we are able to provide, even for infrastructure, because remember, the child and youth care, it's built by social development, not any other department, the infrastructure, and make sure that we put centers, so we can also provide that in terms of plans, because we are also planning some few. I think it's 9 for the next MTF. The other question was on the review of the policy. I think Advocate Durant dealt with that. The other one was the child and youth care centers. Are we creating the hotels? Or is there something wrong with not, or something wrong with doing about this policy issue? My answer will be that, for me, this is the policy issue that we might need to engage. But social development moved to this direction after the country cabinet and the cluster approved that we need to build secure care facilities. They were called secure care facilities then, but now in terms of the new Children's Act, they are called child and youth care facilities, so that we can accommodate children awaiting trial, those that are regarded as innocent until they are proven guilty, so that in the meantime, they can access certain programs, they can be away from the prison facilities where they can interact with hardened criminals. That was the idea. Hence, we came up with the norms and standards also to say, how best can we manage these facilities so that as we run this program, children's rights are also taken care of, developmental issues in terms of what is it that they get out of that situation within the period, because some of them, they stay there 1 month, some 2 months, some 6 months, so it varies, but we come up with programs that are suitable for all the children that will be there, so that at least when you leave, you get something. If it's about hygiene, for instance, I can give an example for the hygiene. It's a very important issue for some children. They grow up not knowing how to take care of themselves. So that if they are there, you teach them. It's just a small example, but it makes an impact on the life of a child. So for me, or for us as a department, we feel it's developmental. It's just really assisting children. They get something out of it. In terms of programs that are provided there. If I can go into a program, examples of programs that are provided, there is vocational skills that are provided in those facilities, also your soft skills, and also therapeutic services. The formal education, when a child is arrested while attending school, there's an interlinkage with that school so that homeworks, lessons are provided by child and youth care workers within the facilities. And children are also given an opportunity to write exams. As indicated, we are also now engaging with education because we want to institutionalize formal education, which is not there currently, in terms of formal classes running on a daily basis. What is happening is that we just link with those schools that these children are coming from. But what we have observed also is that most children that are coming through to our center are those that have missed formal education in their lives. So we found that is a 17-year-old or 16-year-old who left school at grade 3 or at lower grades. So in terms of formal education, that's where we subject them to vocational skills and to other soft skills that they might need to take their lives forward. And I want to link that with the BUSASA issue also. As I've indicated, we have currently 28 secure care facilities or child and youth care facilities running. 11 out of those are outsourced, meaning they've been built by government, then BOSASA comes in as a service provider appointed by social development to run programs or to run that facility. So 11 out of the 28 are run by BOSASA. So BOSASA, what they do, they provide also vocational skills. They've got workshops there. They provide personnel. So the people that are working there, they're not appointed by government. They're appointed by BOSASA. What we do, we give them a certain amount because they do costing in terms of how much is it going to cost them to run this program for the department. Also, in DCS, I want to touch this issue because it links with the child in UK. In DCS, there are no programs for children awaiting care. I think Collier indicated that we had a pilot project previous financial year where we targeted 6 correctional facilities based on the highest number of children awaiting care. We wanted to provide program. We partnered with Kulisa because we realized these children are just sitting there. DCS is saying it's not their core responsibility to provide such a program, even though they are in their facility. We're also saying we cannot support children who are in another person's family. Who is really responsible for this? But we said, let's pilot and see what will come out of it. We piloted it, we finished it, and we also have an evaluation report that indicates to us that really there's a need for these children to get some sort of programs while they are awaiting trial in prison. So hence we are engaging with DCS and education to say, please make provision for such programs to take place at correctional facilities. Otherwise, bring the children to our child and youth care facility so that they can access such programs. But the challenge is that the type of offense that they have committed warrants that they await trial in a correctional facility. And bearing in mind that social development is not responsible for committing children to a child and youth care, it's the magistrate that decides at the end to say, where is this child supposed to await trial? So those are the dynamics I wanted to indicate. I'm not sure if I've answered the developmental nature in full for the broader child justice approach. I think as a department, we think it is developmental in nature because it is focusing on behavior change. We also make sure that a young person is accountable for his or her action, and we are also striving to reduce recidivism. And also, we want to make sure that these young people become better citizens in future. What is key also is that family is put at the center of everything, because anything we do, we link with family, because it doesn't help to deal with a child. You rehabilitate with a child, you empower a child, you give skills. The child will go back to the same environment that has not changed. So it's possible that the child can feel that still the environment is not conducive for him or her to live. So we also empower family members or caregivers or next of kin that are staying with the child so that at least there is some understanding between the two. So for me, it is development that a child who has gone through the system is not the same as they came through the system before. I'm not sure if I've left something the honourable members may remind me. Thanks.
Commissioner? Thank you, Chairperson. I heard when the presenter saying the magistrate is the one referring that, of which I agree, that is the procedure. But the magistrate is not guided by the pre-sentence report from social workers, provision officers. That's what I want to know. Because
thanks. I think, you know, when the presentations were made, particularly around finances, I think it now became clearer as to budgets were there. Because, you see, our understanding in terms of what was happening now, all departments involved applied for 1.2. There was nothing indicating to us that in terms of previous financial years, there were budgets put in place. You know, the question is, and I would like to agree with you, it will be for us to understand as to what happened with those budgets. I'm talking about all departments involved there, you see, so that it can give us a clearer picture. Because we are talking about the 30 million, which then says to us this money only went to the Department of Justice and not to other departments. Now we want to have that linkage to have an understanding as to what is happening with the different departments. And if all departments can give us that picture, so that we have a clear understanding as to how we monitor what happens with the present budgets that are there in the different departments. And because they will give us a sense as to what happened. That is one area. If you can give us those figures, you can, if there are previous reports around your programs about what has happened, if you can have that, because that will give us a sense. Bear in mind that this parliament is the fourth parliament, and we're all, most of us, in this particular committee. Chair, that is the... I would also want to have a clearer picture around NGOs working there. And the point that has been raised around BUSASA. I mean, there were a number of issues that came out of correctional services around wrong things that happened with the linking BUSASA into that particular process. And I'm not sure if there are those problems that were raised in correctional services. Why is social development taking BUSASA on board? Because we, you know, we need to have an understanding as to what is happening. Because there were specific problems. That goes back to what the police were saying to us at some point, that they want to go back to the drawing board. No, correctional service, not the police. That they want to go back to the drawing board. Because most prisons had programs of making sure that people are trained, people well, but they also plant and look after themselves by making sure that food, you know, they had fields there. Like, what do you call them? The one in Kalinen, the one in, you know, they had. Now, it also comes back to you in that, in terms of your own center, besides all these programs, what else do you have, you know? What else do you have that can make sure that these people, these children there can do something? And I don't expect children to work. I expect people, elderly people to work. But if you have 17 years, 18 years, and whatever, those people are about to become adults. Now, how do you make sure that if they leave your center, you know, I know you can't, you're saying you're not keeping people that have been sentenced. These are waiting trials. But what programs do you have in place that assist them to link back into their societies if they're not sentenced? You know?
Thanks, Chair. I'll start with the one that magistrates, they're not guided by social workers through pre-sentence report. As I've indicated, pre-sentence are at the stage of sentencing. But we're talking here about children who are still awaiting trial. But then what is happening is that immediately after arrest, social workers or probation officers do assessments for those children. Then they recommend an option on how this child should be dealt with in terms of a placement, where whether this child should be diverted, whether this child should await trial with parents, whether this child should await trial at a secure care center, or whether, you know, all those options. But at the end, a recommendation is made. And in most cases, the magistrate decides, even if there's a recommendation, you guide, but at the end, it's the magistrate that has a final decision-making to say, looking at the facts presented, I think this child will be better placed when he's at prison or at secure care or with parents or at a home base, you know, all those options that have been presented. The other question was on the finances. I think that we acknowledge the request that we will submit as we have committed ourselves in terms of the budgets that we have been using or we're currently using in implementing this legislation from the previous years. We will not just need time frames so that we can be guided on how long do we work on that. The other question was on the clearer picture on working with NGOs, especially BUSASA. I must say we have not experienced challenges with BUSASA up to now in terms of the type of work that we have engaged with them. Because for us it's not catering. It's the entire program. They run program for children, they appoint staff. It's like you are giving them a building and you say, these are the things that we want you to do, please run. Then we sign a memorandum of understanding with them based on the costing that they've done and how we're going to pay them and the period we want them. Then we review after a certain time based on the MOU to say, are you still doing what you said we need from you? If not, we terminate the contract, we re-advertise, then other organizations do tender. But the type of programs that they provide, they are similar to the ones I've presented, like your vocational skills. If you look, you visit one of the one that is nearer in Cape Town, they do have workshops where they do carpentry and all other things. They do therapeutic interventions. They also provide soft skills, computer literacy, various programs. Thank you.
If I can perhaps just add, I think in terms of the funding aspects, we have been receiving funding over a period of years, and obviously that's part of our implementation. But I think what will be helpful is if we compile a document that sets out over a period of years what has been dealt with for pre-implementation and what has been done since implementation. I think what we try to indicate in our document is that as a cluster, we requested certain funding, and this is what we received. Certain departments didn't receive anything like social development, etc. And we'll indicate what we requested and what that was aimed for, so that you have a clear picture in that regard. I think we'll submit that in writing to your committee to assist you. In terms of the donor funding aspects, I think from a departmental perspective, we are in agreement that we need to be extremely cautious about things like that. And I think we really take to heart what you are saying. The type of funding that we normally envisage for things like this, if we do use it, is once-off things like training material that's been developed or things relating to awareness-raising campaigns and things. We deal with those sort of things as a once-off type of thing with some funding that we receive from donors. But I think not long-sustained things and not things that relate in terms of the impact of what we want to do, because this needs to be dealt with and driven by government and by the departments, and that's how we viewed it, and we will continue to deal with it. But I think we take to heart what you've indicated in terms of we really need to do not look at donor funding even as an aspect for things like this, and I think we'll take that back to our departments. Thank you.
No, Chair, I think I forgot one question, that one of 6 months. Whether we defeat the qualification of organizations to say they need to have 6 months experience. Yeah, we take note of the recommendation of 1.5 years, but in our policy, initially it was 2 years. Then when stakeholders were consulted and other committees, they said 2 years will exclude most organizations that are coming up or that are new. So what I want to say is that we'll take this recommendation back to the department, because initially it was 2 years, then we were requested to bring it down to 6 months. So it will be debated and we will inform the committee on what decision has been taken.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Yes, just a number of issues that have not yet been addressed. First of all, the question surrounding the police journal. I think it's an excellent suggestion and we will immediately take this on board. And see what we can do and how we can best promote the whole concept of child justice in terms of, by utilizing that journal. And then the question relating to the one-day information session, that was spread between all police stations in the country. So the first thing that happened was people from national level went down to every province and trained, in this case, legal officials, in order to go down to all the clusters and make sure that the stations, the station commanders, cluster commanders, and all the key managerial staff at every station, you know, head of visible policing, head of detectives, etc., receive that information session. And then as far as basic training is concerned, new recruits, we are already in the process of amending the basic training curriculum and developing training materials so that from 1 January next year we will be able to present training that as part of basic training. The question relating to the 2-day session and only 990 that have already been trained, who are they? Once again, it's indicated in the slide that these were staff from the CSC, the crime prevention members, sector commanders, detectives, and FCS units. They receive that training. Then, once again, the recommendation concerning the displaying of posters and better information to members so that they will know A, B, C, what must they do, 1, 2, 3, etc. Yes, that is already being developed together with that booklet that I've spoken about. So that's already developed, and I think that these two, the booklet and the posters, will go out simultaneously to all areas so that they will work together. As far as the Pol TV, yes, sir, we have actually made use of Wendy Uticals, and there was a whole program that addressed, a substantial part of the program addressed the Child Justice Act. But it's part of an ongoing process, so it will not be a once-off. It will also be addressed in future programs, but it will be our liaison, communication and liaison services people will advise us on exactly how we will fit it in. And then the booklet, will it be in 11 official languages? Yes, indeed, that's exactly what is planned. Whether we will be able to have it in 11 official languages during the course of this year is another question, which I cannot answer at this stage. The inspectorate, when they arrive at the station and find that they are not complying with the instructions, they should provide some service training. Yes, we've given very clear instructions regarding this, because we said that we require, especially the provincial inspectorate, the people from provinces that go out to police stations, and from national level, they must focus on the child justice instruction and compliance with that. And where they find that this is not being complied with, it's not very helpful to come back and 3 months later provide us that comprehensive report that you referred to without them having, in the meantime, addressed the issue. So that was a specific matter that was raised, and in fact I think it is becoming generalized in the sense that not only as far as child justice is concerned, but any other aspect which is not being complied with. So the next point is, there was a question relating to the dealing of the Tshwane Metro Police with children taken away from their parents, etc. Chairperson, that was not in terms of the child justice legislation. That was actually in terms of the Children's Act. And the functions that they performed on those occasions were functions in order to ensure the children that are in need of care and protection, and children who are not only in need of care and protection, but in need of immediate emergency protection, that they be removed and be placed in a place of temporary safe care. I am not here to defend the Tshwane Metro Police and the methods they utilized. We are certainly looking at ways and means of ensuring that there will not be a repetition. So we are in the process of developing a national municipal police standard in order to ensure that our municipal police services in the country will comply with the principles of child justice as we require that, but also not only child justice, but also with regard to the requirements in terms of the Children's Act. And I think that is very, very important, because it links up with the sexual offences legislation, and I think these matters are important to ensure the protection of our children. And then the question relating to police cells and detention facilities, how can we say that we can train those people? Chairperson, yes, it's perfectly correct that they are working in shifts, and so there will always be somebody on duty at the shift. But there are various ways and means of ensuring that they also attend training sessions. So the station commanders are responsible to ensure that there are always sufficient staff deployed to maintain the levels, the staff levels that we require in order to ensure that our detainees will be safeguarded. But at the same time, that people will have an opportunity of going on holiday and attending courses. But that is something which is planned over time. So therefore, if you look at the numbers at this stage, you will see that the numbers of people that have already been trained are very small.
because the process has just started. But it is, and it was obviously very seriously hampered by the World Cup. Although, incidentally, Chairperson, the World Cup also provided us with an opportunity because trainers were not called up to go and work at World Cup stadiums, etc. So we had the trainers available, so we could train them so that when the World Cup was over, they could start with the training of ordinary members at police stations. And we utilized that opportunity, and it is now getting off the ground very quickly. Then, Chairperson, the general question. We said we are implementing training over three phases. Yeah, and I think I've explained the phases. The question is, how can we show a positive impact? I think, Chairperson, if you needed a positive impact to be indicated from our training, I think it was provided independently from us by the Department of Justice today, saying fewer children have been arrested. So it already has an impact, and I think we are making a great success. And when I refer to high-profile cases, obviously these are things that are visible and everybody know about them. But the smaller cases obviously are monitored continuously, and people have to provide us with reports and returns every month so that we can see exactly what is happening and identify problem areas where people may not have the necessary skills or the necessary knowledge at their disposal in order to deal with it. Chairperson, I hope I have addressed the issues that are specifically pointing to the police. Thank you.
Now, Linda, do you still want to engage further? No, room commissioner.
Even if they don't respond now, because I know there's another person as well waiting outside. But on the Busasa issue, can social welfare maybe tell us how many of these facilities have been run by Busasa, and why are you outsourcing this program? Why are you not doing it for the cluster, doing it itself? Because I know it's expensive, but you can give us a breakdown on the cost of each and every facility, and then we will compare it to state-run institutions. Thank you.
Commissioner, let's continue on the move.
How many of them, at least once, I mean, all of them will have challenges, but how many of them have run, I mean, relatively successfully throughout the country? Because, yes, I don't have to explain. But just to have comparison, that these are the facilities, yeah, they were sensitive, yes, this is how they were run, these ones have these achievements, here are the challenges. But these ones, whilst the money was there, they have not run, and then these were the challenges, so that we can combat what.
Commissioner.
Thanks, Chairperson. My comment is, if we can keep the momentum when we started, I still recall when the justice, I'm sure the police on the reconstruction, they even followed us at Baker's Fort to go and approve this thing. Now, if you get anything or a stumbling block on the way, phone the chairperson. This man, we can't move just because of 1, 2, 3, 4. That's so that we together can see to it this City Judges Act can proceed smoothly.
Thanks.
Okay, I just wanted to propose that whilst we're getting this information, let us have an oversight over 3-4 centers plus the coroner service, so that we compare and see, including some police stations, so that we know exactly what is happening. Because I know in know, the standards may be very different in different areas. I can tell you about my own instance, where if you go to the Mamelodi Court, that is in shape. It's a problem. Not accessible, there are a number of problems, and some of the issues you are raising that you are implementing is not implemented by the Mamelodi Court. And then I'm just saying, throughout the country, how many police stations or how many courts are suffering there?
Do you want to comment? Okay. Thank you very much. Let me take the opportunity to thank the department for your presentation. I think it has empowered us, and we will know what to look for when we are doing the monitoring and oversight to some of these institutions. And we hope that we'll come back to you when we have picked up some problems. And we hope that we'll be available, that we together deal with those issues that we may raise. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we still have to meet with the Magistrate Commission.